Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning, and I am here like clockwork listening to the great music of Nazim Rashid. You can find his album on Amazon.com and also his book, Reconnected. Always have to give kudos to that brother. He does a lot of great work in the community and has some very, very interesting things to say to people. I have a great, great show that I want to introduce to you. We have a great show. Our producer today, of course, the wonderful Malvina Sullivan is managing our switchboard, and she has the chat line open now. So if you care to chat with us as opposed to coming on live, make sure that you take advantage of that. And to your questions through our chat line. Sometimes that's good for us to have a chat line, because a lot of people don't like to go face-to-face or voice-to-voice or whatever to speak. They feel a little bit uncomfortable about it, okay? So don't be with Professor Applewhite, that's me. Don't be uncomfortable at all about sharing your thoughts, your impressions, especially about our show today. Our topic is about the quality of life. We have our co-host, our new co-host joining us today, which is Jennifer Ramirez. You heard her last week as our guest. She is now going online with us, on air with us. Some Saturdays of every month, she'll be featuring the Awesome Attitude series and how to work on changing attitudes so that we can become better students and teachers. And I'm always interested in becoming a better student and a better teacher. Say what? Did you say, Professor Applewhite, did you say you're a student? That's right. I am. I'm a student of life, a lifelong learner. And one of the things that I propose for people out there is to become lifelong learners. Never, ever stop learning. And if we never stop learning, then we'll never stop teaching. Because when we learn something, it sure is a waste of time to keep it all bottled up inside of you And then, of course, it's an RIP issue of rest in peace with all that knowledge that you've accumulated. Why not learn all you can and then share it with another person? Share it with your children, your family members, your friends, your coworkers, anyone you can. Share what you've learned for the week, for the day. If you read a book or watched a television show, you'd be surprised at the energy that happens when you start exchanging information, and it will totally improve your quality of life. Yes, your quality of life. What is quality of life? A QOL, the QOL syndrome. What does it mean? One of the greatest concerns that remains characteristic of our world, our changing world, is how a person can improve their quality of life. And most people, and I said with the exception of teachers as I was working with the staff and writing this up, with the exception of teachers, most people assume a better life is based on our material possessions that we call valuable. Well, I didn't mean to say that teachers don't think that material possessions are cool. They are, of course. Everyone knows that. But the point I'm trying to make is that teachers do not go into the field of education to make money to buy material things. That's what I was trying to say. And I'm sure I can get some agreement from the callers, our listeners out there on that. Teachers roll up their sleeves. I don't care if you're teaching first grade or 12th grade or Sunday school or college courses. You roll up your sleeves and you go to work every day and you do your best to share information, to share what you've learned. And sometimes it gets so, so difficult. And you need something to fall back on, someone to understand what you're going through. So you can always call in to Professor Applewhite during the show. And you can also reach me at White Apple Institute, which is 480-471-8082. And our show for you to call in today is, take this number down, 646-727-3758. Now, that number is only available on Saturday mornings from 10 to 11:30, actually. And I've got some great news for you. Malvina, can I talk a little bit about our upcoming segment, Vet to Vet? Okay? Let me tell you, I'm not able to hear you that clearly, but Malvina, we've got a show coming up, an addition to the show, called Vet to Vet. And what's going to happen is that all of the subjects that we talk about on the student to teacher show, we're going to have veterans who are also students going to school with disabilities, okay, and they are going to share their stories of success. And so we're looking forward to that happening. It starts, as a matter of fact, September the 8th. And Jennifer is on the line also. Let's see if I can get Jennifer on you. Jennifer, are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
Good morning, Jennifer Ramirez. Okay, you're here this morning preparing a great little segment on our show called Awesome Attitude. And I'm sure you're feeling great this morning. You said something to me. You said happy Saturday to me.
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful happy Saturday. It's a good day, and we've got a lot of good things to talk about.
That's right, a lot of good things to talk about. And the best thing we have is that at the end of this show today, we're hoping that people are going to leave our show feeling that, number one, they understand what quality of life is for themselves, because it's very subjective. It's really about you and what you call quality, what you call valuable, all right? And then I hope that, leaving with that understanding, that they'll look at ways to improve their quality of life. So those are the two concepts that I'd like you to really focus on, everyone, today, is to understand what quality of life is and how you can improve your own quality of life as students and as teachers. I said earlier that we were going to focus on some of the things about teachers, and I mentioned, I went a little ahead of myself there, Jennifer, and I was talking about the exception of teachers – that teachers don't worry about material possessions, and then I changed that to make sure that we include that teachers are concerned about material possessions, but they don't go into the field because of that. But I also wanted to bring out that teachers focus on something that is more important than most of us can ever realize. It's called intangible rewards of their job, the intangible rewards of a job. And now this is also inclusive of the preachers, reverends, pastors, ministers. Okay, it's reflective of anyone that is a teacher. You follow me, Jennifer?
Yes.
Okay. And so the intangible rewards that we go after are the things that make us feel good inside, the internal reward system that we build up. And part of that internal reward system that we build up is set on our own little measurement scale of what makes us really value work, value our families, value just getting up in the morning and doing what we need to do for our own personal and professional development. We are all teachers. Let's teach someone that concept this morning. Let's get a little bit into what impacts our quality of life today. Even as teachers, everyone has something that impacts the quality of their life. Most of the time, I would have to say it's family problems. Family problems impact our life. The wantingness, the wanting of having family members around, having a person of interest in our life, a loved one, having a relationship, means so much to a lot of people that they put so much of that energy into that, and they don't focus on what their own needs are. A little bit of that is called codependency, is when we're looking for someone else to build our quality of life. We want to make sure that we become the kind of person that looks in the mirror at you, at me. I'm looking in the mirror at me. And when I look in the mirror at me, what do I see? I don't want to see you when I look in the mirror. I want to see myself. And I want you all, sometime this week, to do a little exercise on that. Now, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. When we talk about quality of life and how we improve that, we need to value who we are. Look in the mirror and hold your eyes, your eye contact in the mirror on yourself for at least 2 minutes. Try that. And I'm telling you, it will be the longest 2 minutes that you'll ever have. But the reason why I'm asking you to do that, to endure that, and I'd love to have some feedback about that, is that by looking at yourself and really focusing on who you are, you're going to come up with some things, and hopefully they won't be external, like, you know, I wish I didn't have that wrinkle there or that bump there or that mole there. Get away from that. Look into your eyes. And if you're one of the students who happen to be dealing with blindness or a person dealing with blindness, you even have a greater insight of how to do that, is to look inside of yourself and feel good about who you are. Can you read things that are going to help you to improve your quality of life? You sure can. There's plenty of books out there on personal development, books that you can read and books that can be read to you, audio books, that through the week, you can actually do things that will improve your quality of life so much that you'll be bursting with joy. And that's where we want you. Bursting with joy about the factor that, hey, I've got something here. I've got me. I'm valuable to me. And so, therefore, if I'm valuable to me, I must be valuable to someone else. And when we start doing that and looking in the mirror of ourselves, we're going to improve our quality of life. I guarantee you that. Set up your own measuring tool for doing that. You know, we in today's world, we deal with the fact that we have a concern for this quality of life about being comfortable and happy and satisfying and all those great things, and everybody wants a better life. But you've got to define what that means for you. You've got to take some time, some real soul searching, and define what that means for yourself. And especially if you're in the classroom every day, or if you're in a job that you don't like, you've got to figure out not only how to adjust your life, and I don't even like that word adjust. I like the word adapt better, and I'll tell you why. When you adjust something, it means that you have some flexibility, some choice. Okay? When you adapt, you are in a situation where you must adapt or change to whatever that circumstance is. It's very, very clear when you're dealing with something like grief from dying or something, there's nothing you can do to bring that person back, so you have to begin to adapt your life. Yes, you can adjust it to certain things in your life, but you have to adapt, which means a total change of the way you think about your quality of life. Do that on a daily basis. We're always thinking about how we can improve ourselves, but we never really get to the real key. And the key is truly inside and looking inside of yourself and recognizing that the answer is within. I believe that God is within. And so if we go with that concept, we can truly enjoy things in our life a lot better as we go through our day-to-day routines. I have a little book, and it's going to lead into what Jennifer has to share with us this morning. And this little book is about life's little instruction book. It's a cute little book, and it has a number of things in it that are about, just suggestions and reminders of how to live a happy and rewarding life. And the author of this book is H. Jackson Brown, Jr., and so I have to give him credit for a great book that he wrote on life's little instruction. And it's just a cute little, few pages here. He says, one of the things that he says, and I love doing this, is to compliment three people every day. Remember their birthdays, okay? Do things that, look people in the eye, say thank you a lot. That's something that we're missing a lot in our society is saying thank you. Believe me, those little things will improve your own quality of life. Following instructions. Well, first you have to design the instructions in order to follow the instructions. What are the instructions? My instruction is that I'm going to compliment three people every day or more. My instruction for the day is that I'm going to look people in the eye and I'm going to start forgiving myself for some of the things that I've done and forgiving others. That's going to be a big jump for me as a teacher, as an individual, as someone with a disability. You notice I don't focus a lot on the disability issue. I will not do that because we are not our disability. So even though this show, a lot of the things that we discuss are about people with disabilities, many of the stories, it doesn't mean that we're focusing on the dis in disability because we're focused always on improving the quality of life. And so this little instruction book that I'm sharing with you, and that I'm encouraging you to design your own little instruction book so you can come up with some rules and regulations for yourself that will increase the way you value yourself. So, Jennifer, today we're going to talk a little bit about something that's in your book, okay? And before we do that, let's take a break for just a moment and give kudos to White Apple Institute for sponsoring us this morning, and we'd like to also thank the almost 1,000 listeners that joined us last week for our first live broadcast in about 8 weeks. So it was really wonderful having people come back online again and listen to us. So Jennifer, what do you have for us today? Jennifer Ramirez, everybody.
Good morning.
We need some applause here. I applaud you 100%. There we go.
Today we're going to be talking about following directions and working with students on following directions in the classroom. And one thing that I've learned to do is to teach my instructors and parents that in order to get children to do what it is that you want them to do, then you come from a place of letting them figure out what's in it for them as opposed to you telling them what to do because it's part of your structure. So the first way to do that is to have any interaction that doesn't start
Jennifer,
with
could
any...
you move, excuse me, hon, can you move your mouth just a little bit slightly away from you? You're a little, coming out a little muffled, and I want everybody to catch those jewels of wisdom that you're sharing with us, okay?
Is this better?
Just a little bit. Okay, yeah, that's a little better. Okay. Go ahead.
So, with regards to it, the most important thing when approaching any of the students is to start with not being oppositional. Start with coming from a place of, I trust that you're going to do what it is that is expected of you, and I know you will. So I'm going to tell you what it is that you need to do, and then you go do it. And planning that it's going to go that way. The point is to be able to get them to do what it is that you want them to do for their reasons, not yours. So such as, like, if we get our homework done quickly, then we can go out and do recess. That's a reason that we can focus on. Or why do we want to get our homework done quickly? And then the students are able to say what it is that they want to get their homework done quickly for. And they might have their own reasons. Instead of, I have a lot of things to do today, I have a lot to go over, and I need for everyone to do what they're told or else we're not going to have any recess today. As it's coming from that place. Now, the structure is incredibly important, and having that background in there, that outlining, this is what's expected of you because otherwise, is important. But the first place to come from is a place of what you want is important to you, students, and why you want it is more important. Because the reason why they're going to be doing it shouldn't be coming from fear or coming from a place of, I'm going to get in trouble, because that just builds resistance. It should be coming from a place of, they should be thinking about, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm going to be even more enjoying what it is that I really want to do. So,
well, let me ask you this. Talk about opposition, and you talk about going into any kind of environment where we're sharing and teaching others something that's hopefully going to change their life and make whatever they're doing come out a little bit better, like their homework or they're just an overall personal life. Whenever we talk about that, I agree with you that there needs to be something that we reward them with. And I think as human beings that we all need a reward system built in. And I don't think we do that enough. We don't do that enough as teachers. We don't do it enough as just human beings, as adults, that we need a reward system. So you're saying to me that before a child can go outside and play in a recess yard, they have to meet a certain standard. They have to finish their homework or their assignment that you gave them, right?
Right.
Okay? And believe it or not, that correlates so well with the adult learner and the fact that we have a reward system, too, to finish our homework. And I find that a lot of students that are doing online, the online college scene is just so heavy now, even online college, online high school. And so students are believing, for some reason or another, that they don't have to have that structure. They don't have to have rules or instructions to deal with, that they can just, have like a lax-daisy way of going through school because they're doing it online. And that's not going to work because the same reward system that you have in place in traditional classrooms, you must have that same reward in place when you're learning online and when you're teaching online also. So that's real important that overall that we talk about reward systems for everyone. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So continue on. What else did you want to add on to that?
Well, another thing I wanted to add on is something that I teach my parents and teach my teachers and also teach the students in my Awesome Attitudes class is focus techniques because, believe it or not, we don't all have that. We're not all born with knowing how to focus. And if you practice how to focus, there's tasks that you can do in order to train your mind on how to naturally be able to focus. And they take 21 to 30 days, just like training any new habit. So for my students, I'll pick up a kid and put them up on the chair. And we'll go over what you do with your eyes. So I'll point to the student's eyes. and say, okay, what do we do with our eyes? And my students know, you keep your eyes on the same spot. Because if I'm in front of everyone, I'm teaching, I want their eyes on me. If your eyes are moving around, that's an indication that your mind is moving around. So as a person, you can focus yourself better by just holding that one spot. As well, if you're listening, for example, if you're listening intently to this radio show and you don't want to be having your mind wander to other things, then you can pick a spot in front of you right now, like even an empty place on your wall that just has like a tack on it, and keep your eyes fixed on that. And you'll be amazed at how well you're able to receive information and listen better by just telling your eyes to have that same place and not focus all over the place. So that's one. So that's what we do with our eyes. Then we talk about our bodies. One way to show that there's a resistance that my students aren't paying attention to me or my parents aren't paying attention to me if I'm training them how to work with others, then your body moves around. When your body moves around, that's an indication that your mind is moving around too. And neither is bad. None of it is. It's all just part of how we work. But we can control our minds relaxing through our bodies. And if I tell my arms and legs and my head to relax and stop moving, then surprisingly, my mind will open up and I'll be able to listen better. So I teach that to my students. I'll point to the arms. I'll say, kids, what do we do with our arms? Well, we keep them still. Good. So then the third way that we can focus on relaxing and focusing is I point to the belly, our lower abdomen. The lower abdomen, if you pay attention to it, will feel your breath. And if you're breathing deeply from that lower place, then you are relaxing your body. And what you're telling your body is that we're calm, we're at peace, we're relaxed, and we're able to take in information. And when I have students that have done all those things, then I can proceed with my lesson feeling well. So if I've got... If I've got a lesson that is intense, then we might get riled up. And then I'll want to calm them down by reminding them what to do to focus, and then we can move on to the next thing in transition.
And you see, this focus that you're focused on right now, and that we want to promote that idea that focus is very important. We need that in all aspects of our student experience, is to focus on the lesson, focus on what's in front of us. The ADHD syndrome that's going on now, and I call it almost a pandemic that we're seeing in our schools, is about truly the lack of focus that we're seeing in the classroom. Students are not focused on their lessons. They're too much energy putting out, and people are getting very the teachers and parents are very frustrated about how to address this. Well, I'll tell you something. When we talk about focus, we need to, as parents and teachers, focus on ourselves first. Before we can start focusing on the child's behavior, focus on your own behavior. How are you reacting to what that child is doing? Are you able to focus for any amount of time? Going back to that exercise that I suggested to people to do with looking in the mirror at themselves, can you actually stay focused yourself on your eyes, looking into your eyes for about 2 minutes? It's going to be very difficult for you. I really want people to try this and get back to me, get back to Professor Applewhite and let me know how that worked. Because I'll tell you, when you transfer what you're doing into the classroom and how you're teaching students, you're going to find that many of the things that Jennifer's talking about teaching in the classroom, are things that we need for the classroom of life, for our own lifelong learning. Anything else to share with us, Jennifer?
Yes, I do have something else to share. One thing that works hugely from a teacher's perspective is the space, the most important thing of all in learning a new lesson is that place of space, quietness. Like when I talk to the students, I'll ask a question and then shut my mouth because the space where they're processing is the most important part of their learning and not filling the space with anything. So initially, when I started teaching, I was taught by a wonderful teacher to hold to the count of 10, like to ask a question, what is what is this book talking about? What is the dog acting like this for? And then shut my mouth, count to 10, and allow that to arise. Because that's when they're sparking in little minds. That space is the most important place for the growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important than anything else. There's no reason to rush, and being comfortable in the classroom is incredibly important. And more than that, learning is a process, and learning arises out of the space.
Okay, go back just for a moment. I'm going to elaborate a little bit further on the face, because we're both helping people to focus on the same thing, the face, the eyes, the ability to read ourselves and to read others. Because you're saying when you focus on a student, okay, and we're helping teachers understand that you're actually saying that I'm asking you to focus on your inner self. Is that right? Are you asking them to focus on their inner self?
Yeah, like allowing there to be just quietness.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And you can't have that quietness unless you've worked on external things in your environment. And that's one of the things that's very difficult when you're trying to teach smaller children how to work on things in their environment, because pretty much they're not in control of their environment. The parents are. So this is really a great lesson for parents and for teachers, is to understand how to read and look at our own face, our own gestures, and how we're coming across to other people. That's all I wanted to say on that. I just wanted to interject that so that everybody gets it, that the lessons that you're sharing are just so so applicable to every stage of learning that we have. Anything else, Jennifer? I know you have some other good stuff in there.
One thing that is very valuable is transition cues. So that's at the dinner table, and that's also in the classroom. So if you come in from a chaotic day at home, for example, there being like a prayer before dinner, or if you're a prayer, or even just go around the table and say something good about yourself, that's something that I've heard families do. Just having a transition between the chaos of the day and the meal that you're about to eat. So those transitions are used in the classroom, like in younger classrooms, like when you are about to clean up. And they've gone from this place of everyone's playing and having a great time to, wow, now I need to get my classroom under control so that we can actually get some learning done. Well, a bunch of chaotic children aren't going to learn a thing. So what we need to do is we sing like the cleanup song. And the reason for those, like a little saying before a lunchtime, a little prayer before mealtime, a little cleanup song before cleanup time, is because it lets everybody know that this is time for a transition, and it's time for me to check in to my body and to give it an opportunity to relax, as well as lets me know that something new is coming. So then the meal can be eaten quietly, and it's, you're not bringing that stress of whatever your day was into the next thing you're doing.
There you go with another reward system. And you know what, we can all day long, we can talk about how we can teach children that, and that children do seem to get it after a while. Of course, you know, like you were saying, the habit change, the 15 to 21 day habit change. Sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter. We can change habits sometimes in 7 days. But the point is that as we grow up and we begin to truly mature about our world and the conditions that are going on in our world, chaos is all around us. It's around the teachers. It's around the students. The areas of the problems that are going on with just drug abuse and the conflicts and war and all of those things cause such chaos within our own personal life that many times we carry it into the classroom. Teachers also, they carry a lot of pressure, a lot of conflict around with them. One example I can't stop thinking about is, examples I should say, are the many things that are going on with students attacking teachers and attacking other students, and how students can learn how to protect themselves, how they can get some real valuable instructions to do that. Because it's not just protecting yourself from the external stuff that's going on in your environment, but the internal stuff too, the fear that we experience before we get ready to go to school in the morning. Teachers experience that just as well as students do. And you know, Jennifer, it's amazing to me that in this day and age, we're seeing so many students that are either, if they're not the perpetrator, if they're not the ones actually with a gun or with a knife, recently I'm just hearing a student took a knife out and tried to stab a teacher and a police officer. Then if we're not dealing with that, we're dealing with all these internal issues. And so we appreciate the fact that you're talking about ways that we can learn how to relax and bring peace, because students are dealing with that stuff. Do you ever consider what's going on in your external environment? Does it bother you at all? Does it bother
absolutely.
You at all, the stuff that's going on externally? I mean, all the violence in the schools and drug abuse and all.
Hugely. It's absolutely heartbreaking, and it's really scary. I think a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about earlier with the ADHD and attention. There's just a lot going on for kids that their attention is getting divided into 50 directions, and that makes things stressful. And when you're stressful, then you feel like you're under pressure, then I think that kids get more acting out. And that's really scary. So the quality of life comes from creating relationships with students that might appear to be that way. If they're feeling, if they appear to be the type of student that is a little out of control, then I would say they require more focus. Even if they're the worst and that you prefer them the least, then they're the ones that you want to get to know the most, because you want to be in the position where you can influence something if you think that that's going to be the type of child that could be dangerous. Because what that means is that this child doesn't feel connected. That's what I'm thinking. And, of course, there's more to it than that. Of course, there's mental illness. I've actually heard, I don't know if you've heard this, but I was hearing someone talk about this week that a lot of those children that have had, they've been involved in the shooting, and even the more recent thing over in Colorado, where the guy who killed a bunch of people at the Batman movie, they were saying that he took SSRIs, and they linked those antidepressant medications to a lot of those kind of crazy
ideas, and many times that's true. For our audience, our listening audience out there, for those of you who are not familiar with that term, SSRI, what we're talking about are drugs, psychoactive drugs that affect the brain. And so many times they're prescribed to us by doctors, and hopefully doctors who have done a really good assessment about whether an individual can benefit from that. But oftentimes, it's just unfortunate that these things are given out very quickly in prescriptions. You know, these drugs that work on our students and are supposed to address depression and anxiety issues are sometimes accelerating them and making them worse. There's a teacher that wrote in to me just recently who's dealing with a lot of depression about what's going on in the schools. And it's funny that you brought up this SSRI thing, because what she's saying is that she's taking drugs to help her to relax in the classroom. My comment to her is that she used some of the techniques that we brought out and we're bringing out today, and I brought out many times on the show about how to relax and bring peace to yourself, do some relaxation exercises, and try to get away from being dependent on any drugs to help you get through the depression and the anxiety of all of these external things that are going on that affect our quality of life. It is scary. Many of us are afraid now to be in the public. But the teachers, I'm getting a lot of teachers that are writing in, leaving me email messages that are saying, you know, what ideas do you have to reduce the fear that I'm experiencing about being in the classroom and about being about addressing students who are basically very aggressive and coming at me? You know, it's so easy to say, well, that we're not talking about younger kids. We're talking about college kids doing this. No, we're not. We're not talking about college kids or adult learners. We're talking about all students. There's a frustration going on that's making students angry and resort to violence. And that anger we need to address as teachers, as a whole, as a nation, as a whole. We need to look at what is making our students so angry that they have to express themselves by going out and giving an AK-47, an automatic weapon, and killing other people. And in doing so, we're making it so hard for us to even develop life's little instructions, rules that we can follow, because there are so many people breaking the rules. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, hugely.
They continue breaking the rules. And so when people break the rules, everybody pays for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely very scary to watch. I have a lot of students that I've worked with that do take medications, and myself, I have a son who I gave medication to when he was younger. And along with that, it did a lot of inspiration for my work because, relying everything on a pill is may or may not meet your expectations. So what do kids do, or what do us as adults do when we need to treat our depressions if that pill isn't meeting our expectation? Well, it's not able to. Even as beautifully as they can work and as smoothly as they can help the body transition, there's still a need for knowing how to manage the skills on top of taking the pills. So, right.
Mm-hmm.
So those, knowing how to do that gives you 100% control. Like, okay, well, maybe the dose isn't right. However, what I can do is I can relax and use my lower abdomen and breathe a few deep breaths. And what I can do is check in and see where my body's at and tell myself to relax a little bit. And what I can do is maybe think of some pleasant things that are going on in my world and just be grateful for a few minutes. And then I can shift. And, of course,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and take a moment. That's huge.
Take a moment. And I use the word visualization a lot. And you're hitting right on that, to visualize yourself in a better place. But of course, the average teacher that's going through this fear is going to say, wait a minute, Professor. I can visualize myself somewhere else all I want to. But the reality is that I'm right here in XYZ school, and we just had a shooting last week, or a stabbing, or a student told me that, a student just threatened me, and I don't want to go back to work anymore. All right? So when we're getting into someone attacking someone's quality of life, now their job is in jeopardy, which means, now we've got a domino effect happening here. Not only are they afraid of losing their job, but they're afraid of being on their job and the salary, their income levels, everything, so many socioeconomic things that are going to happen if they did quit their job. So they go in with all this stuff every morning. A teacher goes in with this stuff every morning on top of the factor that, as we spoke about last week, a couple of weeks ago, about evaluation, about the fact that people are looking at her and evaluating her or him. So there's a lot of pressure that's going on in our society, on teachers, in the classroom, and that we need to address. And when teachers are dealing with these things, the only thing that we can suggest, same thing we would suggest to a child, we would suggest that they relax. So we suggest that they do breathing exercises. This is good for our teachers too. You know, teachers, if you can do it for yourself, then it's so much easier to share that with someone else that you've experienced it. Don't you agree, Jennifer?
Hugely. And I've got, I was going to say also that, it would be awful to be in that situation. I'm glad that I never have been. And for teachers that are going through it, or going through what I was thinking of when you were saying that, is being in a school setting or a system where you don't feel like you have control. You know, maybe there's a lot of pressure or there's 35 kids in your classroom, those kinds of chaotic situations, similar to having, having a child in the school that just did something awful to a bunch of kids, and you have to be there being in that crisis mode. But I was going to say that I think a lot of teachers, they feel very pressured and feel like there isn't any control, but there is things that you can do to be in control of the situation. And if it's really bad, there's groups and there's, like, what are they called? Teachers unions.
The in-services?
Teachers union. Okay. And there's people you can
The teachers union, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me share with you. You're not going to be very happy with what I'm going to tell you. There's not a lot of group learning going on out there. There's not a lot of intervention for teachers, unfortunately, to deal with all of the fear that they're having. There's not a lot of things happening out there to improve the quality of life, and that's why this radio show is so important, is because what we're trying to do is enhance that quality of life for individuals and make ourselves look at things a little bit more optimistically. Even though these things are going on in our world, and it is very, very challenging, and the threat is always on us. It could be me at any moment. I know that many teachers, when they're watching the news and they see all of these things going on with other teachers in other classroom settings, it's frightening to them that this could be me. And what would I do under those circumstances? Things that you would have to do is, number one, begin to believe that we can make change can happen. Positive change can happen. If we don't believe that, it won't happen. That one I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, is that we have to start believing that we will find the answers. And one of them is joining us on this show to talk about some of the problems that are facing teachers today, and facing teachers, especially those that are facing students who have disabilities and that are, especially mental health issues. You know, recently, the student that had that incident in Colorado, they found out, of course, that he was a student at the University of Colorado. That didn't surprise me that he was a student, because, again, we're getting back into people go to school to learn so that they can have increase their quality of life, have a great economic base, and have a pretty much a better world. And what happens a lot is that students, because they're exposed to everything in the world, because they're in a learning environment, can become even more depressed about what's happening, and teachers too, depressed about what's happening, so it just becomes so overwhelming. The thing that we can do is to begin to believe in ourselves, believe that we are powerful beyond measure. And that brings me to something I want to share with everyone, because we've got less than about 10 minutes of the show left. And I wanted to know if you agree with me on reading through Nelson Mandela's speech that he did in 1994. It's a speech that sticks in my mind. I have it hanging up in my office door. And I think that it will help people to see how they can increase the quality of their life. And I don't know if the speech is available online, but if you have any challenges finding it and you want to read it yourself, connect with us at whiteappleinstitute.org, and we'll be able to pull that together. Jennifer, why don't you, before I get into Nelson Mandela's speech, let our listeners know how to contact you or buy your book, please?
You can buy The Attitude Book for Children on Amazon. And you just write in The Attitude Book for Children for instructional use for parents, teachers, and professionals. As well, this August 30th at the Red Mountain Community Center, there will be classes being taught for ages 6 to 9 years old. I've got two classes right now, and then we'll be opening up to Tuesday classes. We'll be doing 3 terms this year, and you can call 480-243-569 for more information.
And on that note, we want to let our listeners know that the same class that you're teaching there in Red Mountain in Arizona a class structure very similar to that will be available in the future with Jennifer Ramirez that will be an online, we'll do it like a webinar. And so we're talking about that. So it's something that we're looking at in the future so that our listeners can jump in and take advantage of many of the things that we talk about on the show and actually participate in our live webinars or listen to them. A webinar, by the way, for those of you who are not familiar, is just really like a seminar on the Internet, on the web. So you basically are looking in your computer and coming up with different things. We're thankful very much for the way that Nelson Mandela's speech has touched the hearts of our staff members at White Apple Institute. And we've talked about a number of the things that he said in this speech. And Marianne Williamson, by the way, we need to give her kudos on this because she's actually the one who wrote this. And Nelson Mandela spoke it. Let me share it with you. He starts with, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. And I'm going to add a little bit on this. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, because many of us feel that we are inadequate, but we're not. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. Well, isn't that something, to really imagine yourself powerful beyond measure? Remember, I was asking you earlier to start measuring your quality of life, where you want it to be. And I have a note here, and I just want to interject this before we get to the close of the show. Mentor Man, our Nazim Rashid, has sent in a chat about the quality of life, and I do want to read this to our listeners out there. And basically that your quality of life depends on your perception of yourself. You cannot have a higher quality of life when your self-image and self-worth is low. Totally, totally agree with that, Nazim, that is so true. And that's why we have to believe that we are powerful beyond measure and that it is our light, the light that we hold inside, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God, and your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing, listeners out there is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. Don't dumb up. Don't dumb down. Show yourself. We're born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It is in every single one of us. So let our light shine this week. Think about our quality of life. And unconsciously, when we let our light shine, we are going to give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Now, that last one is really something to chew into. As we are liberated from our own fear that we're talking about the some of the social issues that are going on in classrooms, violence, students becoming aggressive, hurting people because they're angry about their world, angry about the changes that they can't seem to adapt to. Remember I used the word, the concept adaptation. Adaptation means that, I'm going to give you a really good example on that when you adapt to something that I'm going to leave you with. If your stereo system, the volume on your stereo system, the volume button breaks and you have no other choice, you can't even turn it off, it just keeps going and going and going, maybe you can't reach it for some reason, then what happens is your whole psychological being, your internal self has to adapt to the volume of the music or the volume, the sound that's coming out of the radio, the stereo, whatever. That's true adaptation. Adaptation means I have burned the bridges of anything else and I must deal with what I have right now. Adjustment is usually just a temporary term. Does that make sense, Jennifer?
I mean, it's quite brilliant.
Okay, the difference between, and I try to bring that out a lot about the difference between true adaptation and adjustment. And so what we're asking people to do today on the show, our listeners, is to not go into your classrooms with fear. Don't go into your jobs with fear. Go into your jobs with a presence of liberation. Believe that the situation is going to change out there. It has to change. And we have to be part of the reaction to change. And that's closely related to, you know, looking at our own, what we want out of this life. What do you want out of this life? Do you want to be in constant fear? No, I don't think anyone does. Well, how do you beat that? So many of you might say, well, I just can't do it. I can't do it because I don't have the ability to think about this without feeling a sense of fear. Well, fear is going to breed more fear. Can you imagine the teachers in a classroom where there's, you know, unfortunately shooting going on and someone being hurt? The fear that they're experiencing not only for their students but for themselves. And many of the teachers that I talked to about these circumstances, as a matter of fact, I did my dissertation on this particular subject, Jennifer, which is real interesting, is on how we deal with violence in the classroom. And I can tell you that most teachers are so fearful of going into the classroom that they don't think to themselves that there is a way out. I'm here to tell you there is, and that is starting with belief in yourself, maintaining your optimism. Going back to some of the things that we talked about today, you know, using the breathing techniques that Jennifer shared with us, the visualization that I mentioned, taking a moment to just relax and manage the skills that you're learning. Read some personal development books. Read some things from Wayne Dyer. He's excellent. Anthony Robbins. Oprah Winfrey. These are all dynamic people. Eckhart Tolle. Just go to any personal development section in a bookstore or even pull it up online and look and see how you can build your confidence in a changing world. Evaluate, bring your own measurement system into light and look at yourself in the mirror and figure out how you're going to measure your own happiness, your own joy. To understand the quality of life and to improve quality of life. This is Professor Applewhite sharing with you much love and peace today as we close out our show. Jennifer, anything you want to share with our audience before we close?
Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. Have a wonderful,
yes,
wonderful Saturday.
And Malvina Sullivan, our producer, anything you'd like to share with our audience today? You've been kind of quiet back there. Thanks for tuning in, and she'll see us next week. That's all right. So we'll close out our show with the great music of Nazim Rashid and his River Nile album. And we thank you so much. Much love and peace. Stay positive. There you go.